Hi there, and welcome to A Different Way of Seeing. Have you ever wondered how a disabled person lives their life? Join our host, Lois Drachen, as she chats to people about work, education, travel, sport, the arts, and leisure, and the tools and techniques they use to live their lives with the disability. And now, on with the show.
Hi there, and thank you for joining us on this episode of A Different Way of Seeing, a podcast where we talk all things disability. Today we are talking with Lee Haskin, whose experiences she shared with me a few weeks ago over the phone, and I just thought immediately that I wanted to bring her onto the podcast to chat to her so she could share her story with you as well. Lee, hi there. Welcome to the podcast.
Jay, and thank you for having me and giving me the opportunity to also share my story.
It's really great to have you with us. And maybe we can start off by just asking you to tell us a little bit about yourself, first of all. Who is Lee? And tell us a little of your background.
So I'm Lee Haskin. I am 48 years old, or shall I say 48 years young. I am a single mother of three children. I was born with a cleft lip and cleft palate. I'm the youngest child of nine siblings, as well as a foster sister. So altogether we're 10. And yes, my mom was also a single parent raising all of us. I have a background in the medical field. Not when I was in the field, I never worked within a disability sector. So I've matriculated some over 20 years back, and I was always eager to go into social working, but due to my financial background and things like that, it was never really possible. When you matriculate, you need to go work. So yeah, there's never any chances of going any further than having your matric or grade 12, as they say these days. So yeah, in a nutshell, that's Lee Haskin.
Great. Well, thank you for introducing yourself. Now, one of the three children that you mentioned is Connor. And you also mentioned in the introduction that you didn't previously have any experience of working within the disability sector. Tell us about Connor and his experiences that introduced you to the world of disability.
Okay, so, yes, Connor is now 8 years old, thank God. And Connor, during my pregnancy, there was never ever any signs or doctors being concerned that there will be anything wrong with Connor. During my whole pregnancy, everything went fine. And then I was still supposed to be on night duty the 18th of June, and then I just didn't feel well. So with that, having said that, I called in and said, I'm not feeling well, I'll be there like the next night to report for duty. That night, the 3:15, I went into labor the 19th of June, 2014. Labor went quick, and Connor was born. When Connor was born, I was all alone. There was no doctors, no nurses around me. I gave birth, and I called the nurse, and I said, but my child was just born. Oh, I just given birth. And she quickly ran to go fetch the doctor. They took Connor, and I looked over, and I saw, but they're drawing blood from him. And I asked, but why are you drawing blood from him? He's a newborn child. And they just told me, well, it's procedures, it's normal. And I said, please, this is not normal. And they continued to ignore me, and the doctor and nurse continued with their conversation, and I just heard Down syndrome. Mm. And I didn't really understand what, I heard the word previously, but I didn't really know what it was. I know it was something, but what it was, I couldn't understand. And they continued to do their test and things. They turned around, doctor placed Connor in my arms, and they said, even if he's Down syndrome, he's still your child. If he cries too much, bring him back to the hospital. They turn around and walk away, leaving me with this little baby and not explaining to me what is happening. What can I expect in the future? So I was looking at my newborn baby and I'm thinking, what's wrong? Because I don't understand. I don't know what does Down syndrome mean? Does it mean my child is paralyzed? Does it mean, you know, a lot of things goes through your mind at that time. And I thought, did I do something wrong? Was it something I should have done differently? And you know, you go through all those steps. And as I was looking down on my baby, and I noticed tears falling on his face, and I didn't even realize I was crying. I don't know why I was crying. I think it was more to the fact that, you know, you feel so guilty at that point because, you know, there's something wrong with the child, but you don't know what was or what is the cause. And you're thinking, did you do something wrong? Should you have done something differently? Is it something that can be treated? And I got no answers. They just left me there. And the only thing the doctor told me was, if he cries too much, bring him back to the hospital. So I'm like thinking, why would the child just continue to cry? And I went onto Google, but you know, sometimes Google is not your best friend, as they always give you the worst case scenarios. And they gave me a date to come back in 2 weeks for the blood results. And within that 2 weeks, Connor was very sick. It was up and down the whole time with Connor. Connor even at home, Connor stopped breathing. But luckily, you know, within my working background, I could perform CPR on him at home. But always keeping in mind, there was a condition with this child. What is the condition? I'm not familiar with it. And at the age of 2 weeks, Connor was admitted at Red Cross Children's Memorial Hospital. And I was told, that was the very first time I was told that whatever my religious beliefs is, if it is that my child should be baptized, I must bring him. I must call my rabbi or priest or pastor, and they must come and baptize my child. And the doctor still asked me to move out of the room because he don't want me to panic. And I said, but if I wanted to panic, I would have panicked at home already. And if I had panicked at home, I wouldn't have been able to perform CPR on my child, and I wouldn't have gotten my child to start breathing again in order for you to perform your work. So continue your work. I'll just stand out of your way in the corner. And I turned around and I called my brother who was a pastor. And I said, I think you must come and you must baptize Connor. And he said, he's on his way. And immediately after that call was disconnected, I called him back and I said, no, don't come. Connor's not going to have a baptism like this. He's going to have a baptism at church, at home, and we're going to give everything. And they said, but what did the doctor say? And I said, the doctor couldn't tell me. I'm telling. And I disconnected that call. And that is when I started speaking to God. And I said, and I know within those 2 weeks, I questioned God a lot. I couldn't understand. And due to my past, and due to my upbringing, and due to my condition, I know what I went through as a child. or the name calling, or the, you know, it was not a nice experience, to put it lightly, for me growing up. It wasn't. And to have now a child who also have a condition, which I didn't fully understand at that time, it actually took me back to a time where I didn't feel comfortable in my own skin. And at that time, while the doctors was busy on Connor, I told God, you've chosen me as the mother for this child. Don't give my child and take him back. I am willing to do whatever I need to, even if I need to educate myself, just so that I can know how to, in the long run, take better care of Connor. But you're not taking my child. And I remember a second or two after I just said, amen, the doctors came out. They said, Mommy, you can come in. I don't even have to say the big smile I had on my face at that time. So, yeah, that was the first time.
What was the hardest thing that you, about, you know, the obstacles that you faced as a family after Connor's diagnosis?
Okay, so what happened with Connor? When Connor was born, I had such a lot of plans. You know, we would have moved into a bigger house. We would have done this, that. So there was a lot of plans. I was a working mother. I had my own salary. I could take care of my children, all of that. And now I have Connor, and Connor came with his own package, you know, medical package. And there was such a lot of demands, especially financially. And because Connor ended up in ICU, in a coma, on life support, and then I had to make a decision. So either my work or my child. So I had to resign. So being a single mom, raising my children, where one is a special needs child, and being unemployed, that was one of my biggest challenges. And because we stay in a community where people is very judgmental, they are uneducated when it comes to the disability sector. They always think if you have a child born with a disability, it's always something you could have prevented, or something you could have done differently. So I was all alone, unemployed, and also trying to educate myself on the best way to understand my child's conditions. So I would say that was our biggest challenge. And then also Colin, who is Connor's oldest brother, he's now 16 years old. At that time, he was 8, 9 years old. He also went through a lot. When his schoolmates found out about Connor, they started making fun of him. And he was also very depressed at that time. It was to the point where he even started writing me letters, where he wanted to commit suicide. And so it was very difficult, I have to say. The early stages of Connor's life, the first year or two of Connor's life, was very difficult for both me and Colin. So we had to adapt, and we had to adapt to a new normal. The life that we had, or that we thought we had, changed overnight. It changed overnight, and we were not prepared for it. But we made the best of what was dealt to us.
What I know of your story, I think there is, it's just shown so much strength and resilience. And, you know, it's one of the things that really drew me to your story. And in talking to you, I keep being reminded of that. I want to skip forward a few years to something that happened more recently.
Yes.
About the case that you took to the Equality Court in South Africa, because of something that happened to yourself and to Connor.
Yes.
Tell us about that. What happened, and what happened in the court case?
So this particular day, I remember it very clearly. It was in April, just before Easter. So I went to the shop, our local shop, and this is a shop that I've been attended for the past 10 years. They know me very well. They know my children very well. They know Connor's condition very well. And this particular day was actually the morning hours, around about between 10, 11 the morning. So both me, Connor, Colin, and my little baby, that time he's now 3 years old. So we went to the shop, and Connor was in his buggy. So the buggy, for those who don't know, is a special needs wheelchair. So Connor was in his wheelchair, and for some reason, as we came in, and the funniest thing about this, I went to the shop, and we went to go and buy some snacks for the children. And we were stopped at, just as I entered the shop, and I was told, you're not allowed to come in with him, and was shown to Connor. And I looked and I said, but why? And I was told that, and I was actually shown to a A4 page pasted on the inside of the shop that stated on, no prams allowed. And I said, but this is not a pram. This is a wheelchair. Yes, but, and they said, yes, but even, that is also not allowed. And I said, but why? I said, we can't go into this. I just need to go. They told me. I turned around and I walked away because I didn't want, and I remember I told them, I'm not going to leave it like this. But I also didn't want to make a scene in front of Connor, because Connor is, when I'm upset, Connor is upset.
Of course.
So I got out with my children and we walked. Now Connor's a child. I've taken him to many shops. I've taken him to the malls. I take him everywhere. And he's not a child that will take stuff from the racks. No, not him. And you won't take, even if you put something in his hand, he won't take it. He don't, unless it's something that I or his brother put in his hand, now we will take it. But he don't take stuff that people put in his hand. Even if it's a chocolate, a packet of chips, no, we don't take it. And I went, and as we walked, so my oldest son asked me, Mommy, what just happened? And I couldn't explain to him because I felt so hurt. And he said, Mommy, but what, you didn't buy us anything. And I remember not answering him. And I called Red Cross, Val Hoy from the Down Syndrome Support at Red Cross Children's Hospital. And I told her, this is what happened. I know somewhere, somehow, Connor's rights was violated. I don't know what the rights, I said. And I said, but I'm not feeling well. I'm not feeling happy. I'm feeling sad. This is not right, I said. And she said, well, contact your local newspapers. And I thought, but this is not the way I want to go about this. I don't believe in going to the streets and throwing tantrums and things like that, which I'm not saying it's people that does it is wrong or whatever, that it's just not my way of doing things.
Mm.
And I went to my local police station and I went to speak to the station commander and I said, my son was just denied access to a store because he's in a wheelchair. I don't know what case I can open, but obviously it must be a case. And then he said, ma'am, this is not a criminal case, but a civil case. And I asked him, but what does that mean? Civil case and criminal case, I don't know. And he said, this is something to do with the human rights. So that is what a civil case is. And I said, so where do I lay a complaint for a civil case? And he said, not here. You need to get a lawyer. And I'm thinking at that time, all of this just don't sound right. But also what he did is he asked two officers to go with me to the shop. And they accompanied me to the shop. And at that time, they called the shop manager. I've seen this man many times in the shop. I never knew he was the manager. And the officers went in with me and they spoke with this gentleman. And he said, "But he don't make the rules, the boss make the rules." And the officers all said, "But you know, this is wrong what you've done. You can't say she's not allowed to come in with your son." And then he proceeded, he looked at me and he said, "Now you know for next time not to bring your child to the shop again." And at that point, again, it just angered me. And I walked out, leaving the two officers there. And I went onto social media, and I think it was the Disability Forum. I think it's a Disability Forum that I've spoken to. And I've explained it to them, and I said, "But this is what happened." And they put me in contact with Weber Winsor. And then they said they are taking on our case pro bono, and they've given me the lawyer, Odette Haldenase. And only then is that I realized that what they've done was actually discriminate against Connor and him being in a wheelchair and being a disabled child. As that went on, the shop owner and the store manager's wife came to my house. And they came with a chocolate. And the shop owner said, "But he came and he said, oh, he heard there was police. And he saw on his cameras that it was me. And he said, but he knows me because I'm a regular in his shop." And then he said, "But for future, I can either leave Connor in his buggy at the door of his shop, or I can take Connor out of his buggy so that Connor can crawl in the shop, or I can carry Connor while doing my shopping, or I can leave Connor by one of the store attendants." And I said, "But none of that works for me because nobody will know how to communicate with Connor, and Connor's not going to stay with anybody. And I don't feel it's right that my child should crawl in your store that is so dirty. And also, I don't think it's right that for you to ask me to leave my child outside of your store in his buggy, or even leave his buggy outside for anybody to come and steal it." And then he asked to take a photo of Connor, and I asked, "But why?" And he said, "Oh, just to show that I don't have any hard feelings for people with disabilities." And he gave Connor a chocolate, but Connor didn't eat the chocolate. And I still said, "But sorry, thank you, but Connor don't eat chocolates." And then he left. And he feels that it's fine to leave my son outside or to crawl. And what angered me more was, as people started noticing or realizing that there was a court case, people was so cruel to me, saying I'm making a big thing over nothing. That was, you know, in a walking distance was this shop. I don't have my my own transport. I make use of public transport, and that is money. If I need to book an Uber, it's money. And I had to give up my work, and people didn't want to understand why I did what I did. And people thought, oh, it was because of money that I'm doing this. I wanted fame. And I said, it's never about the money. It's about the principle behind it. It's about treating everybody equal. And I said, when God gave Connor back to me, after that whole ICU ordeal, I made a promise, not to anybody, but to God. And I said, I will never, ever allow anybody to disrespect Connor. So during this whole ordeal with this court case, I had no support from my community. The only support I got was from the disability sector, where people really understood why I did what I did. And I can honestly say it. Oudit Geldenhuys even told me, do not go onto social media because you're going to read stuff that people say and it's going to upset you more. And I stayed away from social media at that point. And about a year later, we won the court case on the basis of discrimination because he discriminated Connor being a child with a disability and in a wheelchair.
And having said that you were successful and won the court case, that they acknowledged that there had been discrimination, has the shop owner allowed Connor into the store? I realize you may not choose to go back to that store, but what has his response been, the store owner? Okay.
So the judgment on that court case was, they actually asked me, do I want, because I've got Connor's Haven, so they asked me, do I want him to make a contribution towards Connor's Haven? So I said, no, I don't want him to make a donation towards Connor's Haven. I want him to make a donation towards, if we should win, towards Red Cross Children's Hospital. And then, so we, when it, the magistrate gave, spoke about it, and she said, okay, so it's 5,000 towards Red Cross Children's Hospital, and then 5,000 towards Connor's next buggy, and then he needed to, apologize in writing to me. And to be quite honest, he never apologized afterwards, never till this date. Never ever apologized. And also I never went back to the shop. I also never ever took Connor back to that shop. And it's actually a pity because that was one of our outings. You know, when it's a nice day outside, I could put Connor in his buggy and I could take him for a walk to the shop to go and buy whatever. Just for the mere fact that I know how they feel about Connor. I've never ever gone back with Connor to the shop. Never. Till this date, never ever gone back.
I can understand that. In that last section, you mentioned Connor's Haven. Tell us about Connor's Haven. What is it and how did it start?
Okay. So Connor's Haven actually started at Red Cross Children's Hospital. When Connor was admitted. So what is Connor's Haven? Connor's Haven serves disabled children and their families who comes from some of the lowest financial income margins in Cape Town. We educate and spread awareness of the challenges faced by disabled children and their families. Connor's Haven provides connections and resources to these families. We also is a safe space for the caregivers of these children to feel supported and understood. So what we try to do, Connor's Haven, we try to bring some hospital services closer to home. And again, I have to say Connor's Haven started because of Connor. Connor's Haven started with our personal journey. As I said in the beginning, I didn't understand when Connor was first diagnosed. There was nobody that could speak to me and explain to me at that point. So then that is where I realized and I saw the need for resources because there was no resources. And when I say no resources, I mean for people on the Cape Flats. That is where Connor's Haven worked. We work on the Cape Flats.
For those who listen who don't know, we do have international listeners. Where is the Cape Flats? What is the Cape Flats? Tell us a little bit more, just to give us some background.
Cape Flats is one of the poorest communities in the Western Cape. And the Western Cape is also one of the provinces in South Africa. So this is where most of the people or where poverty, unemployment is at the highest levels. This is where most of the people have no to little resources, housing, low to very limited. And most of these people, and if I have to bring it back to the disability sector, most of these parents are single parents raising their children. This is where most of these parents are unemployed, not because they choose to be unemployed, but because they don't have the resources and they don't have the finances to get somebody to take care of their child while they go to work. So this is Cape Town the Cape Flats on a nutshell.
And how did you reach out to others in your community to share the value that Connors Haven can give to parents, to caregivers, and to those children as well?
So as I said, Connors Haven started at the hospital, right? So while I was sitting next to Connor's bed, some of the nurses, they already started bringing parents to me, parents who have children with disabilities and don't know how to cope, don't know how to act. They don't know, you know, they have no resources when they leave the hospital. So they need somebody to speak to when they leave the hospital. You have all these resources for as long as you are in the hospital or as long as your child is admitted in the hospital. But there's a life outside of the hospital. So I started the very first beneficiaries of Connors Haven, the very first members, was signed up at the hospital. And word of mouth spread like wildfire. These parents went home. They went to go speak to another parent who have a child with a disability. And that parent went to go speak to another child with a disability. A child with a disability. And then I came home and I would, you know, it's strange, but before Connors Haven, I always never thought of myself as somebody that would stand up and speak in front of a crowd, stand up and speak, you know, be a guest speaker or anything. But when I started Connors Haven, I would walk around, would go to the malls. If I see a parent or have a child with a disability, I would go to them. I would say, excuse me, my name is Lee, and you are? And I said, if you don't mind, I would like to speak to you about your child. And strange enough, the parents are so open-minded. All we want, and the reason why I say we, is because I am one of these parents. And the reason I could be so successful for the past 7 years with Connors Haven is because I know firsthand the needs of these parents, because I'm going through that on a daily basis. So I would go to them, I would speak to them, I would find these parents in the malls, I would find these parents in the hospitals, I would find these parents on the road, and then also I've also formed alliance with other organizations within the disability sector, and I've teamed up with them, and they would recommend or send parents to me, and I would send parents to them. Like one of the organizations is Sonequip. I work very well with Sonequip. I make use of them. I make use of their social workers and all of that. And also they would come out to Connors Haven, where we would give workshops, talks on disabilities. You know, let's talk disabilities. They would educate the parents on how to, you know, do some physio or OT at home. Because as I said, we serve a community that is very underprivileged. So the parents don't normally go to the hospital, not because they don't want to. They consider physiotherapists, OTs, group sessions and things like that as not a priority. Reason why is because they make use of public transport, and the public transport don't want to be bothered with us, you know, children, with real cheese. And we do not have money to take up an Uber to the doctor every time for all those necessaries. So what we are doing, or what Connor Zaven is trying to do, we are bringing those services a little bit closer to home. So this is what we also, together with Sonakop, Connor Zaven had a medical seating where Sonakop came out and we did the medical seating, and all of those children received free mobile devices from Sonakop. So this is how I've partnered up with a lot of all the other organizations, because on my own, I cannot give them the services. But also these parents, a lot of these parents, they don't know about Zoom. They don't know about WhatsApp. They don't know about this. They need one-on-one interactions. So this is what has been happening. And, you know, for the past 7 years, I was very successful. But also, I need to say this, I've worked from home. I've been struggling very hard to get a place. So to have all those parents, or some of the parents, sometimes we need to break it in three, over a period of 3-4 days, to do group sessions like that, because now I do it in my living room. I need to take all of my furniture out of the living room to accommodate the parents and things like that, you know. So this is how we've been working. And it's been a huge success for the past 7 years.
As I said earlier, story of resilience and definitely finding ways with limited resources. What is your intention? And you know, the other thing is, I love that you call it Connor's Haven and Resource Center. And I think that from what I'm hearing, being a resource to other parents, being a place where they can find the information that you struggled to find when yes. Connor was first born, is quite central to what you're doing with Connor's Haven. What are your plans for the future?
So what we're trying to do, so for the past 7 years, we've been running the resource center. And so now what we are aiming to do, we want to move into our own building where we can expand and also open a daycare center for children with disabilities, because really we lack that in our communities. There is so little. If I should speak just about my community that I stay in, there's nothing, not even one for Connor to go. The nearest that Connor can go to is when they pick up Connor in the morning, say 7:30, Connor only reaches his center at between 10 o'clock and 10:30. So if we could have one within our own within our own ward, just imagine how good that would be. And that will also give the parents that opportunity to do something totally different than just to have to sit at home taking care of your own child. Yes, we love our children. We want them to have the best. But what I am also saying, and this is when I struggle with other people, when it comes to, don't just accept when people say, put your child into that school. Put your child, because your child have this disability and that disability. Why? My question is always, why? Why does other people have, they can choose? Why don't I have options? Why don't Connor have options? Give me options. Don't tell me he must just go there. He must just do that. I always say no. You give me options, because that is our human right. We have options. We can decide what is good for us. You cannot, and this is what I always tell the parents. I always tell them, listen, you are the only expert when it comes to your child, because you are with your child 24/7. You know the abilities and capabilities that your child have. Don't let anybody put your child in a box. Never, ever.
So true. So What is it that you are needing to fulfill that dream? That plan. Oh. It's not a dream, it's a plan. What yes, do you need yes. to make it come happen?
So, also one of our biggest struggles that we have is transport. Our people struggle to get from point A to point B. And, you know, finances, I don't have. We're going to say we don't have finances. So if we really are in need of finances, and maybe if anybody have transport that they feel they are not in need anymore, or they have an extra one that they can really donate to Connors Haven, because this is also what is part of what we do. This is also part of our services. We go and visit the members at their houses. Because sometimes the parents get, especially the mom, especially what happened during COVID, they get depressed mm-hmm. because now they are at home all the time with the child. There's no routine. They just need somebody else to talk to. And now we need to go to their houses. We need to go and speak to them. We need to reassure them. Listen, there is somebody out there that you can speak to. I am here. I am willing to listen. I am willing to be here anytime. And believe me when I say anytime, people call me up really anytime of the day or night to come and speak. Mothers pitch up at my door at any given time. And because I know it is really a need when somebody just pitch up at your door, it's not because they are bored at their place, because being a parent, you know, there's always work at your house. But when a parent comes and they just sit for 5-10 minutes and not say a word, then you know there is something. And I can honestly and I can truly say, through Connors Haven, I've become a doctor, I've become a social worker, I've become the best friend, I've become the sister, the mother, the everything to my community. And when I say my community, I'm talking about the disability community. That is my community. That is Connors Haven's community. So really, we are in need of finances. We are in need of our own transport. And more of all, we urgently and desperately need our own place that we can work from. That is really what we need, because we really need to. This is something that should have happened years back, because the need is so great and it just increases as with each passing day, it just increases.
Lee, if someone would like to reach out to you to offer help or just to find out more about your story, how can they do so?
So we are all over social media. We've got a WhatsApp telephone number that is on the South African code +27 061 749 6932. We are also on Facebook. So on Facebook we've got two pages that are actually linked together. The one is the Connors Haven and Resource Center, and the other one is Connor, My Special Angel. So on Connor, My Special Angel is normally where I talk about Connor's journey, but also we started with Connors Havens on that page. So it's actually two pages, but you can find more or less both Connors Haven and Connor's Journey. Then we are on Instagram, LinkedIn, and Twitter. We also have an email address, which is Connors Haven, CONNORSHAVEN @gmail.com. That is how people can get a hold of us. And then also we've got a give and gain account. If people feel they maybe want to make a contribution towards Connors Haven and they feel what we are doing is good, we also have a give and gain account as well.
We will add links to all of those contacts in the show notes so that as people listen to the podcast and hear your story, they can reach out to you. Lee, as a final question, and you've been through this yourself, you've supported other parents, other caregivers with children with disabilities. What advice would you give to a parent, to a caregiver, with a new child with a disability?
Always know, first of all, always know you are the only expert on your child. Love life as if there is no tomorrow. Remember, today is a blessing. Tomorrow is not guaranteed. And if it's a first diagnosis, it's not your fault. You did nothing wrong. It's just sometimes people normally say, God choose special people to have specialist children. I would always ask when people tell me that, I'm like, so why did I do that was so special? You know, and I can't think of anything that I've done that was so special. But what I'm saying is it takes a strong person to raise a special needs child. So tap on your shoulder and say, I'm the best for this child. I've done nothing wrong. I will raise my child with my head up high. I will do whatever God wants me to do. Sometimes this road of ours is not always, it's not always just sunshine. We will shed tears. We do shed tears, but we don't just shed tears anytime. Also, one thing that I want to say, you know, and I love saying this, especially with our parents, is people are always keen to say, it takes a village to raise a child. When they say that, they refer to the non-disabled child. So if it takes that child in the mainstream, if it takes a village to raise that child, then my question is, what does it take to raise a child with a disability?
If you'd like to reach out to Lee and find out more about Connors Haven and Resource Center, I have included all the links in the show notes. And if you feel that you're able to make a contribution to the work that Lee is doing, there's also a link there on how to donate. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you again next time.
Thank you for listening to A Different Way of Seeing. We would love to connect with you. So find Lois at loisstrachan.com or Facebook, Lois Strachan Speaker. This podcast was edited by Craig Strachan using Hindenburg Pro. Hindenburg, it's all about the story. The credits are done at Naledi Media. Naledi Media, all your vocal needs under one roof. Read by Charlie Yazzie. That's it for now. Thank you for joining us and see you next time when we bring you into the world of seeing differently.